Are we ready? All right. So this prayer I'm about to read, to me, is it encompasses our decision in the third step for me. My Lord God, I have no idea where I'm going. I do not see the road ahead of me. I cannot know for certain where it will end, nor do I really know myself. And the fact that I think I am following your will does not mean that I am actually doing so. But I believe that the desire to please you does in fact please you. I hope I have that desire in all that I am doing. I hope that I will never do anything apart from that desire. And I know that if I do this, you will lead me by the right road, though I may know nothing about it. Therefore, will I trust you always, though I may seem to be lost and in the shadow of death. I will not fear, for you are ever with me, and you will never leave me to face my perils alone. 2 minute meditation.
Prayer.
God, please lay aside everything I think I know about this weekend, the biblical, alcoholism, addiction, 12 steps, myself, and especially you, God, so I may have an open mind and new experience. Help me to see the truth. Amen.
The men that I sponsor know that I don't talk about God's will versus self-will. I don't think I can differentiate between the two. I think everything's God's will. It's like the wave is it's not the ocean, but it's still part of the ocean. Some of the darkest things that have happened in my life, when I was in the middle of the experience, a lot of people could have looked at it and said, oh, Tarek's self-will run riot, he's selfish, he's self-centered, that's why these things are happening in his life. But then I look back on him years later, and I look at everything that came out of those experiences, and I'm like, man, that was like God just leading me along, because I had to have those specific things take place, those circumstances, and how I acted created a new surrender. It peeled back another layer of the onion. So where do you differentiate? If you looked at my addiction 10 years ago, people would have said I was self-will run riot. Now looking back on that was God leading me to my surrender. So how do you tell the difference between the two? For me, it's about what the prayer says. I have a desire to please the force, to be to be with the stream of the Force. Now, my current conception as God is very much like the Force in Star Wars. That's it. That's my conception of God, and it has been now for several years. It's very Taoist. If you read up and look research into the Tao, that's what it is. So a constant oneness. Everything is at one-ment. Everything is connected. And I have a desire to please that Force. I have a desire to flow with that Force, and I don't flow with it all the time. But that's what's supposed to be happening. And so that's one of the most, it may be the most beautiful prayer I've ever come across. I hope that I will never do anything apart from that desire. And I trust it's leading me where I'm supposed to be going, because that's where I end up. We always think we know what God's will looks like. It's like we think we know what the day looks like when we're going to relapse. So I'm going to talk a little bit about this tonight when I give when I tell my story, because the third step's a very important part of it. But I'm going to turn it over to Brandon now.
So the bottom of 63, three lines up from the end of the last full paragraph, we just said the third step prayer, which I believe, well, back up, right after the prayer it says, we thought well before taking the step, making sure that we are ready, that we can at last abandon ourselves utterly to Him. Because to me what the prayer says, it's the contract that I'm going to go forward with the rest of the work. So the decision is to do steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And that's the decision. Here in meetings all the time, people talking about, I turn it over and I take it back. I turn it over and I take it back. Bullshit, you made a decision. You turned it over. Go. And then it says down towards the bottom of the page, it says, this was only a beginning. What? The third step was just the beginning? You mean there's a lot of other stuff that I do? Though, if honestly and humbly made an effect, sometimes a great one was felt at once. If you really mean it, you'll feel it. Those third step promises at the top of the page will start coming true. I was in a meeting one time, and this guy was sharing that I've done the third step prayer, and I need to know when to start on the fourth step. Look at the bottom of page 63. Can anybody tell me what the first word of the last paragraph on the page is? Oh. Do the prayer. Next. Start the fourth step. Then I launched. That seems pretty powerful, right? It doesn't say that I just kind of crawled along. I launched out on a course of vigorous action. Okay? And then we get into the inventories. Okay? At the top of page 64, it says, though our decision was a vital, life-giving, and crucial, very important step, meaning the third step, very important, life-giving, it could have little permanent forever effect unless followed at once by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. Blocking us from what? From God and everybody else. If it's blocking me from everybody else, we're going to go with the theme of the forces and everything. Then if God's in you and I'm blocked from you, what am I blocked from? God. Our liquor, our crack, our heroin was but a symptom. So we had to get down to the causes and conditions. In our current world that we live in, our current society that we live in, is we treat the symptoms. We rarely treat the problem. Take a pill for this, it fixes that. And then you need to take a pill for that, that fixes this, and so on and so forth. So if I really want to get rid of the problem, I can't just get rid of the symptoms. I have to figure out what the mechanics, what the mechanism, what the gears are behind the symptoms that are causing me to be that way. Well, that's exactly what the inventory is about. It says, taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. The fact-finding part is the fourth step. The fact-facing is the fifth step. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock and trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods. Some of that shit that I've been walking around with that's been wrecking my life, so I see it. Up at the top of that paragraph, it says, a business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Here's the instruction for Brandon, for me, that I must do this work regularly. Is I can take inventory now, what happens next year? What happens beyond that? Stuff starts to creep back in. My ability to tolerate the uncomfortability in my life gets smaller. And through that, I have to go back and rework all the steps, not just the inventory. That's my instruction. Down at the bottom of the page, it says, resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics and addicts than anything else. You notice that resentment destroys more alcoholics and addicts than anything else, including drugs and alcohol? So then it goes into an explanation. We're going to kind of hum through this stuff because, well, that's what we're going to do. So the resentment inventory.
You have a question?
No.
Hey, there's a bunch of people writing this down, so give them time to write down each column.
Okay. So resentment inventory. The way that Tarek and I do it, it's four columns. We do an extended third and fourth column. And we'll explain what that means. I'll explain what that means here in a minute. So, who in here knows what person, institution, or principle that they're pissed off at? Two, three, four people? Who rubs you the wrong way? Who irritates you? Who annoys you? Who just pisses you off? Who do you just not like? That's column one. Okay? A person, we know what that is. Institution, the institution of marriage, the cops, Bridges of Hope, judges, principal. Throw out some principles.
Well, some of the ones that I was looking at in early recovery were, you know, the man is always the provider, or it's not what you know, it's who you know. Those were some principles that came up in my first inventory. But now principles, I look at them from self-defeating principles. Here's some examples. I am important, and I have to be heard at all times. So what happens? I put myself in situations where I always have to prove my importance, and I have to be heard at all times. Puts me in direct collision with people. So this came up, this is from a couple years ago, this is from 2 years ago. Here's another one. I must defend my right to be right.
Anybody got that?
Yeah. No matter how hard I try, I'm going to eventually fail.
That's not a fun one to look at.
The things that I start are mine and I own them. So these are principles that show up in my life. A principle is a code or value that I live by. So the longer I stay clean and sober, it's not really about the resentments towards people and institutions, because the only reason I'm resentful to a person or institution, they brought one of these principles to the surface. It's really what's coming out of my third column. And we're going to get into that here in a second.
And what's interesting is sometimes that you think you're pissed off at the person, you're actually pissed off at the principle behind it. Is those of you that think you're actually pissed off at Tarek and I, you're not really pissed off at Tarek and I. You're pissed off at the fact that we say that you need to work the steps in order to get and stay sober. It's tricky. That's what's going on.
And maybe the principal is like, I don't like to be told what to do.
That's right. So what person, institution, or principal has let you down? What person, institution, or principal annoys you? Okay, that's column one. Column two. Guys, people make so much work out of column one and two. This is the easiest shit on the planet.
You've been doing it your whole life.
Who am I pissed at? Column one. Column two. Why am I pissed off at them? Boom. If you can't figure that out, seriously, you know. You know why I'm pissing you off right now. Write it down. Column two. I am angry. Why I'm angry, let down, or annoyed. Be specific and concise. No generalities. Don't, like, it doesn't, this. Quick. What's the reason? I'm pissed at James. Why? He ate the last cookie. Done. Move on. Well, you know, he said this and he gave me this look. Fuck that. He ate the cookie. Column three. How have my seven areas of self been hurt, threatened, or interfered with? These are the belief systems and the ideas about the world which come out in this one act in the drama of life. It's also called theater of the lie. Is another way to look at it, or more importantly, the theater of life. The first area of self is the self-esteem. Okay, this is the role that my stage character that I assign myself. Okay, so will you play with me, James, that you ate the last cookie? You didn't eat a cookie, but let's just play that you did. So, pissed off at James, column one. Why? He ate the last cookie. Self-esteem, how does this affect me? Well, I'm a person that should get what they want. Boom, done. Move on. Pride, how others should view me. Okay? It starts with no one should or others should. No one should take the last cookie without offering it to me. Done. Pride's done. Ambition. What do I want out of this play? Something external, outside of myself, a result. I want others to respect me.
I wanted the last fucking cookie.
Or I want the last fucking cookie. The sicker you sound when you write column three, the freer you're going to be at the end of it.
And when we're done, I'm going to read. I just wrote inventories about some people not too long ago, and I'm going to read one of those pieces of inventory to you.
All right, then I'm going to stop with the example because you're going to give an example. Security. What do I need to live, breathe, and to need to live and breathe and to be okay in this act? Personal relationships. What deep-seated beliefs about how this relationship should look? Again, we'll give an example in a minute. Sex relations. What deep-seated belief about how the gender I'm writing about should act or behave?
A real man, a real woman would do this in this situation.
Pocketbook. Have my money or time been affected? What are my beliefs and ideas around these two areas in relation to this resentment? A lot of people say that my pocketbook wasn't affected. Bullshit. The time that you spent thinking about it is enough to affect your pocketbook. Time is money, right? It's the only commodity on the planet that cannot be reproduced is time. So then you have the realization. This is kind of like in between columns three and four. It's this. I look at all this crazy-ass stuff that I wrote in column three, and I ask myself, have I committed the very same action which I am resentful at? Yeah. When was the last time? How often do I? I must forgive them, myself, and have compassion for them because I am like them. It starts to shift. Now I'm starting to see how the things that I think about you and how you should interact with me, man, if you have to follow those rules, then I do too. Oh no, that sucks. And then we got column four. So, top of page 66 and 67, it's the sick man prayer.
Something current that
just happened. Okay. So it starts on the bottom of 66. This was our course. We realize that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. Thy will be done." Interesting what I emphasized. I read this book for 5 years and didn't see that it said this. We ask God to help us show them tolerance, pity, and patience. See, I used to think that it was kind of like a little prayer of, "God, give me tolerance, pity, and patience." No. I have to show them these things, and then I get them back. Well, crap, that's so fun. I can't be pissed off at them.
So when I take guys through the steps and they're writing inventory, and I've got a guy right now that's doing this, and I gave him the instructions for the first three columns. All of this is in the big book. The extended third column, the book says we considered it carefully. This is a method that we use to consider it carefully. Instead of checking it off, I get to really look deep down inside and see some of the views I have about the people and the world and the world itself. And so as you write the first three columns, between the third and the fourth column, there has to be some access to power. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to set aside entirely what the other person did and resolutely look for your own mistakes and where you're at fault. One of the most watered down pieces in AA and CA is when people say, "I'm looking for my part." The book doesn't say that. The book says that we were to set aside entirely what the other person did and look for our own mistakes and we're at fault. Because here's what happens. You want to do the exercise?
Yeah, so here's what happens. So here is... Let's say all these pieces of paper up here are the situation that we're in, right? All this stuff. And here's what I want my part to be. Right here. Just that. Okay? What are the chances that my part is actually accurate if all of this is the situation?
You guys get it? You understand what we're saying here? And it's really important when I go make amends, because if I've gone through this process thinking I have a part and the people that I have to go make amends to have their part, so when I come to clean up my part, you should naturally want to clean up your part.
What?
I can't tell you the number of people that had harmed me, and I went to make amends to them, and they didn't make amends to me, but I still got free because I was there to take ownership of my mistakes and where I was at fault. That's it.
And so let's just pretend that you're going to take, even if you're only at fault 5%, let's take 100% of your 5%. Can you now take 100% of the blame for the situation? I think you can. Because if your 5% doesn't exist, the situation doesn't exist. Take ownership of your 100%. That's it.
So I give this kid I'm sponsoring, he's not a kid, he's a grown man, he's 30 years old. I give him the instructions and I said, "Look, when you finish the third column, before you start the fourth column, I need you to take a deep breath and say this prayer. God, please help me show them the same patience, tolerance, and pity I would cheerfully grant a sick friend. They, like me, are sick too. How can I be helpful to this person?" The first couple of pieces of inventory he wrote, he didn't say the prayer, and he couldn't write the fourth column. And then he remembered the instruction I gave him, and he started saying the prayer. And all of a sudden, he could write the fourth column.
It's like magic, Derek. Are you saying that he said a prayer and something happened inside of him?
This happened last week. The kid calls me up. He's like, "Dude, you're not going to believe. I got to tell you about what happened while I was writing inventory." And it made me smile because that's what's accessible here. But we can sit up here and talk about it all weekend. I mean, you got to have your own experience with it. But that's what's so important about going between the third and the fourth column, because there has to be access to power. Access to power is made in that transition. Because you and I, you know, the book says this list holds the key to the future. The reason this list holds the key to the future is you and I have lived in the first three columns our entire life. I know who I'm pissed at. I know why I'm pissed. And if you said, Tarek, how did it affect you, I could give you an answer. But I don't know about you, but until I worked the 12 steps, I had never once in my entire life set aside entirely what other people had done and looked for how I created the situation. Has anybody ever done that, gone through your life, and every time you found yourself in a bad situation, you said to yourself, oh, how did I create this? But now that's how I live life. That's the beginning of the psychic change that the big book talks about. It's a new way of thinking, and it helps you take ownership for your experience in life. So you're never going to be a victim. Does this make sense?
Perspective shift.
Shift in perspective.
So referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish? Where had we been dishonest? Where had we been self-seeking? Where had we been frightened? Though the situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly, and were willing to set these matters straight. Column four. What am I afraid of? How am I being dishonest? What am I delusional about? What is my selfish attitude? What are my self-seeking actions? Where have I been at fault, and how am I to blame for this trouble? Remember, my troubles are of my own making. I get through this. I got to breathe again, because that thing that I've been carrying around with me, I just put down. What you got?
Okay. This individual shall remain nameless. He wants to start his own sober living, and he has left my employment. That was part of the resentment. I've let him go. So, self-esteem. I'm a businessman and a friend that demands respect and loyalty from my friends and my employees. I'm a man that took care of him. Pride. Others should always be loyal to me. Ambition. I want him to fall flat on his face and fail. Security. I need him to respect me to be okay. Personal relationships. A real friend and a real employee remains loyal for eternity. Sex relations. A real man doesn't slither like a snake and get himself fired to do what he wants to do. Pocketbook. Yes, threatens my financial security. Delusion. Or no, fear. Column four now. Now I'm going between the third and fourth column. What am I afraid of? My business failing and him succeeding. What's my dishonesty or my delusion? I lied to him about there being a day when he would run the launching pad. I had no intention of letting that happen. The delusion is he's out to take my customers. That's just a delusion. Selfish attitude. He should stay out of the industry and do something that he hates for a living. Self-seeking behavior. I refrain from communicating with him so I don't give him any information about his employment contract, and he never realizes that his employment contract says nothing about him starting a sober living in another territory. So he kept asking me if he was in violation of his non-compete, and I just wouldn't respond. Okay? I created this whole situation because of my fear of my business failing. It was driving all of this. You know, people leave businesses all the time and start businesses, and competition is good. But I feel like he owes me something. My selfishness has set me up to have this resentment. This is one of the worst resentments I've had in a really long time. The grouch and the brainstorm are not for me. They're the dubious luxury of other men. I don't experience a lot of resentment, but this was one for at least a couple of months. Every time I heard his name, it created a physiological effect in my body.
And then certain people that he would 10th step with would be, have you written anything about this? No, I'm not ready yet. So this is what's funny, guys. It's like, so we've got these resentments. We know why we're pissed at these people. And we know that if we write inventory that we can get free of. So when is now a good time to start getting rid of that resentment? No, I want to hang on to this one a little bit longer. Wasn't it causing you suffering and pain? Yes, but I want to keep it. What? When you look at it from a logical perspective, it makes zero sense. From an emotional perspective, it goes on all the time. You guys are walking around with them. Some of you know it. Some of you don't. Some of you have never looked.
So that's resentment inventory. Any questions? Did my example make sense, or do you need me to do another one? Okay.
Got a fear for me?
Yeah.
I don't need it.
No, just go out of the book.
All right, so... bottom of 67. Notice the word fear bracket alongside difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. Somehow, the short word touches about every aspect of our lives. It is an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence is shot through with it. It set into motion, trains, the circumstances which brought us the misfortune we thought we didn't deserve. Perfect. But did we ourselves not set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. So fear inventory, this is a very simple to the point way. I've done it a lot of other ways, but we're trying to give you just some simple examples.
If you guys want all of this stuff, just ask Pappy to email me and I can email it. So you don't have to, you know, go through and try to write as fast as you can. I can email all this stuff.
So... who in here thinks that they don't have any fear? Who in here thinks they don't have any fear? Okay, well, good. I thought I didn't have any fear when I showed up. I'm a big, tough, strong guy that can get through anything, right? Hell, I averted death. I ain't afraid of nothing. My first inventory did not have a whole lot of fear in it. Today, a little over 6 years sober, I can tell you that there are two things that show up consistently in my life that dominate my life. The first one is pride, what I want you to think about me. And the second one is fear. Now, that's kind of a lie because pride is really fear because I'm afraid that you won't view me the way that I want you to view me. So everything is fear. And the way that I respond to the world when I'm acting out negatively is always fear. I heard a guy say one time in early sobriety that every time that I experience anger in my life, it is associated to fear. And I said, that has got to be wrong. There is no way that's right. And so I started thinking of examples where it doesn't apply. And the one that I came up with was when my kids are acting out and throwing a fit in the middle of Walmart, making a bunch of noise. It is not fear when I get angry at them. And then I thought to myself, well, why do I not want them to act that way? Well, I don't want them to bother the other customers. Why don't I want them to bother the other customers? Because the other customers might look at me and say, why doesn't he control his kid and think I'm a bad dad? Shit. I'm afraid that other people are going to think I'm a bad dad. It's the only reason why I'm acting out in anger. You can do this test with anything in your life. I guarantee you the things that you're most pissed off at are the things that you're the most afraid of. And like I told you before, the thing that I've learned is that the taking no action to resolve the fear guarantees that the thing I'm afraid of will happen. So, four column fear inventory. What is the fear? Snakes. Why do I have this fear? Because I was bit by a snake when I was a kid. How did I set the ball rolling? Well, I was in my bare feet and shorts walking through an area that probably had snakes in it. Okay? Oops. I created my fear by doing stupid shit. What perhaps is a better way? If we really boil it down, perhaps is a better way is trusting God. That God will take care of it. In this case, would have been to not walk around in an area that probably has snakes in it with no jeans and boots on. So, most of our fear is just that simple. Okay? So, that's fear. Clear? Now there's this great prayer that nobody ever talks about that I think is incredibly wonderful. It's a fear prayer. I've made a reference to it. It's in the last paragraph from the bottom. It says, "We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality a way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. We ask," we haven't said this, but anytime you see in the book where it says "we ask," it's a prayer. "We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be." So, the fear prayer is, "God, please remove my fear of people not paying attention to me and direct my attention to what You would have me be. Please remove my fear of doing the steps and direct my attention to what You would have me be. Please remove my fear of making amends and direct my attention to what You would have me be." You can insert anything in there. And what you will find is magically you say that prayer and intuitive thoughts will come to you of things to do. It's a wonderful prayer. So simple. And then we've got the sex inventory. Do you have that? Okay, so most people, it is my experience that a lot of people will do resentments and they won't do fear and they won't do sex inventory for some reason. Sex inventory is not a... two things. Number one, it's not a list of all the partners that I've had. Because if I think that that's what it is, I'm going to approach it from a gloating perspective of, look how awesome I am. Oh, she was so hot, man. It is not necessarily about pokey pokey. It is about my conduct as it relates to other people. Usually the opposite sex. So, on page 69, it has these questions. There's 9 questions. In this relationship with this person, where have I been selfish? Where have I been dishonest? Where have I been inconsiderate? Whom did I hurt? This question is rarely answered correctly. Now, if we're really looking at our conduct, let's say that I've been unfaithful to my wife and she found out about it, and the woman that I was unfaithful with, her husband found out about it, she's got kids, I got kids, let's just say that the hypothetical that hasn't happened, but let's say it's happened. So, whom did I hurt? Well, I hurt my wife. Right? Because I want to look at it real, real small. Okay? So, if I hurt my wife and my wife and I don't have a positive interaction and there's separation between us, you think my kids might notice that?
Yeah.
Okay, so I affected my kids. Okay, what about the woman that I had the relations with that was also married? Do you think it affected her?
Yeah.
Okay. And maybe they see that her kids see that interaction, so it affects them. Okay, let's see. Because most people don't keep things to themselves when they're pissed off, so my wife probably talked to her friends about it. Do you think it affected them? Do you think it affected my wife's friends who are married that now think that men are cheating sacks of shit? So it affected that relationship. Well, the parents found out about it. My parents, her parents. So now they're affected. My parents' friends are affected. So the question I think should be, who did I not hurt? Because the chances are, especially in the example I'm giving you, that the people that were unaffected are far less than the people that were affected. Did I arouse jealousy? Did I arouse suspicion? Did I arouse bitterness? Where was I at fault? What should I have done instead? Okay? Usually it's the opposite action. Been faithful. Been honest. This is not rocket science, guys. This is real, real simple stuff. Okay, now, after you've been through your first inventory, and you're going back and you're doing these, you're doing another inventory, another set of steps, rarely have you generated a bunch of new harm as it comes to sex conduct. At that point in time, you can use this as simply a conduct inventory. There's a guy that I'm taking through the steps now. He had like 12 resentments. He had a handful of fears. There wasn't a whole lot of interaction and relationship since last time he wrote inventory. But so what I had him do is I had him take all 12 of the people that were in his resentments through these 9 questions. I can tell you, when I was listening to his 5th step, there was very little evidence of how he lived life in from a distorted angle in his resentments. But when we got to this, when we started seeing his life from the other person's perspective of how he generated all these things, oh, there was something to work with there. There was some real growth that came out of it. I'll also tell you, out of my experience, the first time I went through inventory, my resentments, there was stuff in there, but it wasn't real powerful. Of course, I didn't have any fear because I was awesome, or I thought I was. But when I got to the sex inventory and the first time I went through the steps, And I went through this, what I really started to see is that the way that I treated women was the same way that I treated all sorts of other people. This desire to be right, this desire to prove my worth, this desire to make sure that you knew how awesome I was. My fear of not being accepted. All these things, my desire to absolutely dominate every relationship I was in, showed up in this inventory. 2 years later, I go through the inventory process. The resentments gave me a bunch of information that I was unaware of. A year and a half after that, the fear was like, that's where fear really started showing up in my life. Now, today, it's kind of a mix of a little bit of resentment, a little bit of fear as I go back through the inventory. But the reason why I continually do this inventory process, and I don't just start with step 4, I start back at step 1. What does my current unmanageability in my life today look like? Where am I having trouble in personal relationships today? Where am I experiencing fear today? At 4 years sober, 5 years sober, 6 years sober, what's going on, guys? And when I really start to look at it, it changes, it morphs. The different inventories show me different things, but I always get some information that allows me to grow and become more effective in my interaction with people. And when we get to the 10th step, it allows me to be more aware of what I'm watching for in the 10th step. There are a lot of people that do just a simple checklist inventory of it affects my self-esteem, it affects my ambition, it affects my security. That does work, but for me, I've never done it that way, so I don't understand how it gives me any growth. So those are the three inventories. If we go back to page 69, it's the second full paragraph from the bottom of the page. It says, in this way we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. So we've gone through the nine questions. Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and we looked at it. In this way we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relationship to this test. Was it selfish or not? Was Brandon involved or not? Is really what it should say. Because if Brandon's involved, it's always selfish. We asked God to mold our ideals and help us live up to them. We remembered always that sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised or loathed. I don't have the guys that I take through the steps just right. A sex ideal. I have them write an ideal for how they want to show up in recovery. I have them write an ideal for how they want to show up at work. If they have kids, how do you want to show up in your relationship with your kids? How do you want to show up in your relationship with your significant other? If there's some other areas of their life that they're struggling with significantly, I have them write an ideal for those. Because if we never know what we're aiming at, we never have a goal of how we're supposed to show up, what are the chances that we're going to show up the way that we intend? Zero. Because I don't even know what I'm looking for. Can't tell you how many guys I've sponsored through the steps, taken through the steps, that they want this magical woman in their life that's like a 10, a 12, you know, 15, off the charts, right? But we look at their inventory. Number one, they're in no way the type of person that would attract that woman to them. They want this hard body, really in shape, great looking women. And they're fat and slothful and don't have a job. It's like, yeah, that's going to happen. So writing out the ideal of the woman that you want to show up in your life, then you get to ask yourself, am I the type of guy that's going to attract that woman in my life? Oh, guess I got some work to do. And then if you're currently in the relationship, it allows you to look at that and check against how you're doing. Am I showing up the way that I want to show up? And if not, can I change it? Is there something I can do to improve it? So that, in 45 minutes, is a bunch of inventory.
I know we just threw a lot at you. Do you have any questions? All right. One thing I got to get clear on. You don't have to write this format of inventory to stay clean and sober. It's a very insightful. It's a very revealing. And it creates profound experiences. I've watched it do it over and over and over. But I got clean and sober on a checklist inventory. People are not sticking needles in their arms and smoking crack and drinking whiskey and vodka when they have an experience that says they're alcoholic because they're not writing this kind of inventory. People are getting high and drinking because they're not writing inventory. You guys follow me? So we don't want to leave you with this impression that you're screwed unless you write this kind of inventory. That's not what we're saying here. This is the inventory that Brandon and I have the most experience with. That's why we're sharing it with you.
So maybe you can't get down with all the information that we just showed you. But let me see if this describes anybody in here. But it is from our twisted relations with family, friends, and society at large that many of us have suffered the most. We have been especially stupid and stubborn about them. The primary fact that we fail to recognize is our total inability to form a true partnership with another human being. Our egomania digs two disastrous pitfalls. Either we insist upon dominating the people we know, or we depend on them far too much. If we lean too heavily on people, they will sooner or later fail us. for they are human too, and cannot possibly meet our incessant demands. In this way, our insecurity grows and festers. When we habitually try to manipulate others to our own willful desires, they revolt, they resist us heavily. Then we develop hurt feelings, a sense of persecution, and a desire to retaliate. As we redouble our efforts at control and continue to fail, our suffering becomes acute and constant. We have not once sought to be one in a family, to be a friend among friends, to be a worker among workers, to be a useful member of society. Always we tried to struggle to the top of the heap or to hide underneath it. This self-centered behavior blocked a partnership relation in any one of those about us. Of true brotherhood, we had small comprehension.
Most of us. That bad email, maybe you guys make a list of what